This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Justin Sweetelson filling in for Gil Alexander on a numbers game alongside Kelly Bidlin. Thanks for waking up, hanging out with us, and welcome into your Friday. It is technically a football Friday as we'll recap what we saw last night in Canton, Ohio with the Hall of Fame game. We got a fun show lined up for you as we examine the AL Cy Young market. In case you haven't checked, there's a new front runner out in front as your betting favorite. We also have to examine the NFL Week 1 lines, looking ahead to get ahead of some of these moves. We've got a loaded guest list coming your way. 45 minutes, we go to Columbus, Ohio. Bobby Carpenter, national champion, former NFL linebacker. He will give us a lowdown on the Big Ten, the Buckeyes, and what to expect in the college football season upcoming. Daryl Moose Johnston in about an hour or 2 hours, I should say, on the show. No, 1 hour. One hour on the show. NFL on Fox. I went back and looked. He's been calling games on Fox since 2001.
That, you know what? When I was writing down some questions yesterday, I kind of had that same thought. I was like, this has been going on for a long time.
I was like, I know he's been in our lives for a long time, because obviously the Cowboys, that's right in our wheelhouse for our age when they were running on Super Bowls, three-time winner there. I was kind of like, oh, man, I feel old. That's 25 years. I always do the math. I go, if someone was born the first game that Moose Johnston called, they'd be 25.
Yeah.
Our coworkers are around 25.
Yep. I'm a little upset you just had to lay that out like that. Thank you, Dustin. I appreciate that. And I'm sure we got Troy Aikman and Emmett Smith coming up later in the show, right? Just to really rub it in for Dave Ross, because I kind of promised that. We're going full Cowboys.
Yeah, we're going to go Jay Novacek. We're going to go Leon Lett. We're going to... Hopefully I'm not saying anyone who's not with us anymore.
One of the Joneses is going to hop on at some point.
Steve Fezzik will join. He at 11:15 a.m. Eastern time, fresh off Bet Bash, where I'm curious if there were any fights with Steve Fezzik and someone on the internet who doesn't like how he acts.
And the Ethics of Touting, I believe is the name of it.
Business Ethics. What movie?
I don't know.
Billy Madison. When they're playing the Jeopardy game, business ethics.
It was like last night I used the Borophil line.
More like Borophil. I used that in biology so much that I had to do biology after school. the teacher was like, dude, you're killing me, man. We get it. You saw Billy Madison in like 1998. Relax.
It was 12 years ago.
And then finally, the Bear. Chris the Bear Felica will drop by at 9:15 our time, 12:15 on the East Coast. I mean, it's three bears at the desk, I guess.
No. Chris is already back home. Oh, he will not be here in studio.
No.
Yeah. He was here for Bet Bash. I think hopped on a flight yesterday. Is back home because he's hopping on a cruise in a few days.
That's low-key psychotic behavior. I'm not gonna lie. Like, that is.
I keep getting surprised by, you know, like, we have a lot of people we know in town. It's great to see all these people. I keep trying to, like, you know, see as many as I can. I keep getting surprised at how early people are taking off this year. Like, everybody's out of here tomorrow at like the latest.
Getting in, getting out.
Yeah. I'm like, I kind of have the same thought. I'm like, you come all the way to Vegas and you're not staying through the weekend? Who flies out of Vegas on a Saturday morning?
Well, you know what? The flights are probably really cheap.
They probably are.
There's just probably not that many of them. That's the problem. Yeah. But we begin today with football back in our lives. In case you missed it, the Hall of Fame game was an epic one. The Panthers with a 33-30 win over the Cardinals. Carolina cashes as the favorite minus one. We go over that total of 34. In fact, Carolina almost got there by their lonesome. That was the highest posted total when the lines came out since 2012, when it opened at 36.5. We saw steam all the way down to the under at 34, Kelly. Underdogs, unfortunately, lose last night, but they are still on an 8-3-1 against the spread run, going back to 20-13. The over, though, is now on a 5-0 run after going 7-2 to the under previously in the Hall of Fame game. That was the first ever Hall of Fame game for the Panthers. They pick up their first win and the first cover in the preseason for Dave Canales as the Panthers get the dub. Now, there's a lot to digest as far as this is concerned, but just pulling back real quickly, I think what we saw out of Haynes King and Carson Beck, This goes with when we looked at quarterback depth charts yesterday on the show.
Yep.
It goes with my theory. There are a lot of experienced college quarterbacks who are fighting for NFL jobs where in the past they would have been guys who maybe started a year, maybe started 2 years, but these guys are 3, 4, 5 years in college. They are so much more ready for what they're going to see in the preseason than the quarterbacks of years past. That's why I think that the world of just walking into the betting board and saying, well, it's the preseason, I'm going to bet unders, I don't think it's a blind bet like it used to be back in the day, because Haynes King put on a show, Carson Beck put on a show, and they're just the first of two with a ton of experience in college that I think are going to translate at least to the NFL preseason.
Yeah, I think it's a great point that you just brought up. I think that this is going to be, you got to be a little careful with this, right? Because this is only going to apply to a few quarterbacks. And like Haynes King and Carson Beck just happened to play each other last night that kind of both fit this, right? So it's not going to be every rookie quarterback.
No, it's but multi-year. It's if you started 3 years of college, you're probably going to be pretty good. Because you're going up against guys that you're better than.
I think it's an excellent point, though, for preseason betting, sides and totals moving forward. How is the changes in college football affecting what we're seeing in the NFL? Might not be directly affecting NFL regular season play right away, right? But preseason games with guys like that, I think it's a great point.
Haynes King goes 21 to 34, 180 through the air, 39 on the ground, 2 touchdowns. But the key was the end of the game.
Yep.
He wraps it up from the 5 with no time left, getting into the end zone, running it in. And every time he ran the football, all I kept thinking was, this is Taysom Hill.
Mm.
This is Taysom Hill all over again. At Georgia Tech, Haynes King was not afraid of contact.
No, he was not.
He is a fast quarterback. He ran the 5th fastest 40 by a quarterback at the combine, just seconds behind Anthony Richardson. He ran a 4.46. Richardson was a 4.43.
I didn't realize King ran that fast.
Yes. He is a running back with quarterback skills. I'm telling you, if he can catch the ball, you can use him like a Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
And I think that could make Carolina really dangerous with a guy like Dave Canales, who I have a lot of questions about where the Panthers are, what their ceiling is coming into this year, and if they can replicate some of the lucky success that I think they had a year ago. But if you had a weapon like King and it's a wrinkle into your offense and people aren't really sure how you're going to utilize him, if you've got a 2-back set where it's Haynes King next to Bryce Young, if I'm Dave Canales, that's what I'm in the lab thinking about. Now, there's nothing that leads me to believe that that's the direction they're going.
Mm-hmm.
But Haynes King was incredible last night, and that was after what we saw from Carson Beck. And I think Carson Beck is probably the big picture story because he has a chance to start real meaningful games for the Arizona Cardinals this year. He goes 15 and 19, 188 pass yards, 1 touchdown. And I think we're gonna look at it from 2 angles, because I think you have to give him credit for looking the part. But you can also temper the enthusiasm by acknowledging the defense that he was going up against wasn't trying to throw anything exotic at him.
Sure.
They weren't really trying to show anything. They weren't trying to confuse him, but he still gets credit because he looked composed. He looked the part. He threw some lasers. He took some shots. And I think the big game experience that he went through in college at Georgia and then last year at Miami, it showed itself in this situation as to why he's ready to be a quarterback in the National Football League.
Yeah, I think he looked great. I think we're going to say this all preseason. Just be careful what you're taking away from it, right? You know, like you say, you know who he's going up against. It's not who he'd be facing if he ends up starting games for the Cardinals, obviously. But, how can you not be excited about what you saw in that game out of Carson Beck if you're a Cardinals backer or a fan, right? Like, this is you're not counting on a ton from him this year or maybe even down the line. So if he actually turns into something and pans out to be your starting quarterback, that's great.
Did it screw up the Cardinals' actual plans, though, and how they're building a roster? Because they did sign Jacoby Brissett to be the starter.
No.
Gave him more money. No. Because if Carson Beck comes in and he plays well, but he's not a franchise quarterback, he's like a good quarterback, and now you've avoided the opportunity to tank in year one of LaFleur to ensure you get a top 5, top 10 pick. What if Carson Beck wins them 3, 4, 5 games?
What are the odds, though? Okay, like, you think he's
Tyler Shuck?
He could give him a better chance to win than Jacoby Brissett?
There is a world.
Okay, and then I think it's a great problem.
Then it works.
It maybe hurts you in the draft, but you can't say for sure. If he's winning ball games, you can't say in the moment this isn't our franchise quarterback.
No, but many of an NFL coach has been fired because they got fooled into thinking someone could be their franchise quarterback, and they were good, but they weren't good enough to take you to the promised land, which ultimately has you back on LinkedIn updating the profile.
Yeah, I kind of think if he's good enough to push Brissett out of the way, I'm throwing him in there right now. Find out what I have before I got to go back to the drawing board in next year's draft. Does it? And if it maybe hurts my draft position a little bit, fine, because I need to figure out what
you'll
I have.
You'll still get someone. Yeah. You'll still get someone. He's 25-1 for Offensive Rookie of the Year. I think that's something a lot of people are considering because quarterbacks are going to get an opportunity to put up really interesting numbers. He's going to be throwing from behind when he plays. The question is, where in the schedule does he actually
take
over?
You just don't bet that now.
As the quarterback one. What if Jacoby Brissett is very competitive and they're in these games early? I don't know when you see Carson Beck.
Yeah, I think you got to wait on that. I'm not saying there's no chance he's not live for that award, but there's just no reason to bet that now. Wait till you get some signal that he's actually going to start some games. I have a conversation to him versus Brissett just because Brissett actually had a pretty good season last year. And his passing numbers were not bad for how bad this Cardinals team was.
No, and if I'm the Cardinals, looking at how their schedule starts, they're at the Chargers week one. They have Seattle week two. They're at San Francisco week three. You go to New York week four. Detroit's week five. The Rams are week six on the road in L.A. Then week seven, it's Denver. I don't see a soft spot.
This is the same thing with Fernando Mendoza, right? You're like, when are they going to get him in? And you pull up the schedule, and you're like, there is no obvious place to put him in.
I retract the statement of what if he walks them into 4 or 5 wins. I retract that statement because until week 15, off their bye at the Jets, versus the Jets at New Orleans versus the Raiders, I don't know when that first win's coming.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know when that first win's coming.
This just goes back to our fewest wins conversation yesterday. Dolphins, Cardinals, just bet them both.
The American League Cy Young market is completely shifted. We'll examine that. Plus, this team can't stop beating the best of the bunches. That's on the other side of a numbers game.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
This is VSiN, the sports betting network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Coming at you from the Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas, Dustin Sweetelson alongside Kelly Bidlin. It is a numbers game, VSiN, the sports betting network. You can smell football in the air, fresh off the heels of the Hall of Fame game, which Kelly was saying in the break, probably the best Hall of Fame game we've ever seen.
It's the best Hall of Fame game that anybody's ever watched. You never expect that when the Hall of Fame game rolls around that you're actually going to get exciting offensive football, right? I mean, that was back and forth.
And we love getting caught up in the prisoner of the moment of the football reaction. And to help us examine what's to come in the season, I'm thrilled for this conversation. He is Daryl Moose Johnston, NFL on Fox analyst. And we were talking in the break. He's been doing this for a long time. We're talking the longest tenured analyst in the game right now. That is so cool. You've been a fixture in our lives. We welcome you into our homes every single week. It's been going on for 25 years here. Three-time Super Bowl champ as well. And I want to begin with your Dallas Cowboys because I think a lot of us in the media, Moose, have to eat some crow. We all questioned the Brian Schottenheimer hire a year ago. I got to tell you, the Dallas Cowboys were a good competitive football team last year, and I have no reason to believe that defense won't get better with some of the moves that they made in the offseason. Where do you stand on Dallas and how they sit in this NFC East?
Yeah, this is going to be hard because everybody's going to think I'm a homer. But I'm the same as you when they fired Mike McCarthy and then elevated Brian Schottenheimer. You know, a lot of that stayed status quo. And you're like, why wouldn't you just stay with Mike then? You know, he had 12-5, three consecutive seasons. Is this a bump in the road season with all the injuries? But they make the change. And I same as you, I'm very impressed with Coach Schottenheimer. And I was a huge fan of his dad, Marty. So I shouldn't have been surprised. But this year they did a Legends Day, and they brought out all the old Cowboys, and we got to sit in on team meetings, go to positional meetings, be at practice, have a meal afterwards with everybody. And the energy and the vibe in the team meeting was very, very unique. It was so different than anything I had experienced during my playing days. And Coach Schottenheimer had anybody that was a part of a Super Bowl championship with the Dallas Cowboys to stand up and just, hey, what's one of the things that you thought was important? So my guys can hear, you know, what we need to do to start getting this thing pointed back towards a Super Bowl championship. So I thought it was awesome. I got an opportunity to visit with Christian Parker a little bit. And I think one of the big things that we took away from that was the offensive players talking about how much better the defense was this year, the communication. They were not moving the football in OTAs as successfully as they were last year. So I think a lot of the guys on the offensive side are already excited about what Christian Parker has brought in as a defensive coach. And I think the cool thing there is, a lot of times you see a coach come in and he's bringing some of his guys in that have been on that journey throughout coaching. And, you know, Christian kind of just looked at each position and who's the best guy out there and let me bring him in and hire him. So I think that this defense, and again, you talked about Coach Schottenheimer last year on the offensive side of the ball. They don't have to be great. They just have to be good. And I think that they're going to surprise some people. I really do. I think the personnel fits what Christian Parker's scheme is about. You've got some of those chess piece type guys that are in that lineup. I think they've done a really good job at getting that front shored up. The big question for Dallas is going to be the linebacker position. I think in the secondary, they shored up some things there. And if everybody can stay healthy, I think Dallas has an opportunity to win the NFC East. I really do.
Yeah, Moose, once again, this is, you know, one of the more interesting divisions in football to me. You step back and look at what all these teams have done in the off seasons and kind of expectations. Where are you at in the rest of the NFC East? Where do you think this Cowboys team stacks up with the rest of them? Specifically, Commanders and Giants. How much of a step forward do you think both those teams could make this year?
Yeah, I think the entire division got better in the offseason. Now, are we back to the level that the NFC was back in the early 90s when I was playing? No. I mean, that was an unbelievable time for that division. But I do believe that everybody got better. I think John Harbaugh coming into New York makes them better immediately. I like the staff that he's assembled there. There's a lot of talent that he can work with. The offensive line is rounding out. I think that that's the biggest thing in the NFC East is going to be the trenches. And the team that's dominated that for a long time is Philadelphia. And I think the other three are starting to catch up to that as Philadelphia kind of comes down a little bit with some of the injuries there. So for me, I really believe that the Giants are going to be in the mix. And last year, everybody was 1-1 against Philly. You know, everybody split with Philly, even with the records that they had. So I think the Commanders will take a step. I think that they're the one that I want to keep an eye on a little bit more. I don't know how much of a move that'll be because really everything depends on Jaden Daniels. You know, does he stay healthy this year? They really weren't able to get a lot around him. Some big changes on defense, both coordinators are new. I think that's the other thing in the NFC East is we've got a lot of change at the coordinator level, along with not just John Harbaugh as the head coach of the Giants, but you look at the other three teams and everybody's got some changes with the play callers on the offensive or defensive side of the ball and for Washington on both. So I really think it's going to be Dallas and Philly battling at the top. I think the Giants, if they can stay healthy, will be close right behind those two. And then Washington will bring up the back of the pack. And if everybody stays healthy in Washington, you know, they have the ability to win a game at any time. So I think it's going to be a fun division. I really do.
Chatting with the great Daryl Moose Johnson, NFL on Fox, 3-time Super Bowl champ, 2-time Pro Bowler on the team on NFL on Fox, Kevin Kugler, Allison Williams. And week one, they're going to be in Cincinnati as the Buccaneers are in town. Bengals are 3.5-point favorites, totals 51.5. I am fascinated by both of these teams this year, Moose. Tampa Bay's got some drama off the field, but the division rightfully favored to win it. Cincinnati's the one. I don't know if it's an annual thing for you, but I just talk myself into this team every single offseason, and I think that this is a team that could be there at the end in L.A. again for the Super Bowl.
I agree. Yeah, it's kind of odd. We've had Cincinnati, I think this is our third time in the last 6 years to have them in the opening week of the season. They kind of went through that slow start thing. We had that conversation with them, you know, for a couple of years, getting off to the slow start and, you know, did you make some changes during training camp? I think this year, the big thing is the focus is on the defensive side of the ball. And very similar to what we talked about in Dallas, you know, how good Dallas's offense was if they just had a defense to match with it. Cincinnati's the same way. And then obviously last year, Joe Burrow getting hurt. If Joe Burrow can stay healthy, I think if the defense meshes quickly, which, you know, just kind of getting ready for week one and reading through some of the training camp notes that we're hearing coming out, the defense has been very competitive, very similar to what I just talked about in Dallas, where the offense is commenting on how much better the defense is this year. I think we're hearing the same thing out of Cincinnati and their defense, how much better they are this year in year two under Al Golden and some of those pieces coming in. You know, Dexter Lawrence gets a lot of that credit, but Jonathan Allen is there as well. So that's pretty formidable in the inside. So there's some really good news coming out of Cincinnati. And again, a lot of change in the other three teams in the division. So there's a little bit of continuity, and then the improvement on the defensive side of the ball, you know, give the Cincinnati Bengals an opportunity. And it's funny that you said that about the Super Bowl, because I'm doing some homework last night and I'm looking at everything. And one of the things that kind of jumped out to me was, could we see another Rams Bengals Super Bowl at SoFi again, like we did in 2021, 2022. So, you know, I think that there's a potential there. I'm leaning a little bit more towards another conference in the AFC that I think will probably surprise some people. It's not the West, but there's one that I think is going to be very competitive, and that iron sharpens iron thing that comes out of that. I think the team that comes through the playoffs out of that division is going to be somebody that could challenge Cincinnati for that AFC championship.
Ooh, well, let's get right to that then. I was going to ask about the Rams, but okay, are we talking AFC East or AFC South here?
Yeah, I'm going to go South. Our group had Liam Cohen a couple of times, and we were just blown away by him. And I think what they've got with James Gladstone and Tony Boselli down there with Liam Cohen in Jacksonville, we had the Jacksonville-Denver game late last season. There's just something going on. And I really felt last season that the winner of the Jacksonville-Buffalo game was going to be the AFC rep in the Super Bowl. I know the way that Jacksonville-Buffalo game ended with the interception, with an opportunity to go down and win that game. You know, they've been sitting on that one all off season. So I really like Jacksonville, Houston, and a healthy Colts team that will get these teams playoff ready by the time the postseason gets ready to go underway. So I'm really looking at the AFC South as the division that has the champion come out of it. I know a lot of people are probably thinking West with Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes being healthy again, you know, Kenneth Walker being there and being a fixture coming over from Seattle. You know, you've got, you know, Denver coming back after a great season last year. You've got the Chargers. But I do feel that the South, having saw them a couple of times last year, those three teams, and walking away always impressed, not only how they played on the field, but just with our whole time visiting with the head coach and the staff and the guys on the team, I really was impressed with our interactions with all three AFC South teams. So I think the one team that comes out of the South is going to be the team that represents AFC in the Super Bowl.
Jags 15-1 to win the AFC. Moose Johnson's with us. In about 30, 40 seconds here as we say goodbye, you were on some of the most hyped up teams, and you guys delivered as the Cowboys with pressure, with all-star rosters. The Rams have an all-star roster. They're the Super Bowl favorites. What do you think is the biggest challenge for them this year to live up to the hype?
Matthew Stafford staying healthy. To me, that's the biggest thing. I know we haven't heard anything about the back since last summer, but backs are weird, right? Anything can, it can just pop up out of nowhere. So what is Matthew's health going to be during the course of the season? They pushed their chips to the table twice before, 2018, 2019, when they made it to the Super Bowl against Patriots, 2021, 2022, when they made it to the Super Bowl against the Bengals. They've done the same thing this year. Trent McDuffie, Myles Garrett. I mean, it is, on paper, it's a very, very impressive team. And the big thing about the Rams organization is it's not just about paper, because Sean McVay and that staff are phenomenal. So it's not just the talent of the guys, it's the culture of the team. If they stay healthy, they're going to be really, really tough to beat. So for me, the biggest thing is going to be is how is Matthew Stafford's health during the course of the season.
Moose Johnson, NFL on Fox.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, Dustin Sweetelson hanging out with Kelly Bidlin, Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. You can always catch the show, SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, VSiN Watch App, and radio affiliates across the United States. God bless America. And Game Plus.
There you go.
In Canada. College football is going to be here before you know it. We are just a few weeks away from week zero, and then the big boys get going in week one. And our VSiN College Football Betting Guide is out right now. There's a few surprising things, but I think the one that jumped out to me immediately when we were all doing our predictions of who's winning the national championship, we only had one out of 22 people here at the network pick the Ohio State Buckeyes to win the national title. And I'm trying to figure out why we're all down on Ohio State, because sure, they lost a lot, but if you look at the NFL draft every year, they always lose a lot. And they lost a lot in 2006 when our next guest was selected out of Ohio State. He is Bobby Carpenter, former linebacker for the Buckeyes, a national champ in 02, also hosts the Bobby Carp Show and Morning Juice on 97.1 The Fan out in Columbus, 7 years in the NFL, and he joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Bobby, does that surprise you that Ohio State, who is the betting favorite to win the title, out of our 22 people here who are pretty sharp and follow college football, only one of us chose the Buckeyes to win it all?
Yeah, it's interesting saying that. You mentioned college football is almost here. I mean, heck, most teams have started. I was just leaving Ohio State's practice right now. And, you know, one of 20, I mean, I guess if you look at it and you're trying to find value, there's not a lot of value usually on the odds-on favorites. So you try to find, obviously, something alternative of that. But, I mean, this is just who you think is going to win it. I'm curious, who was the number one team picked, or the team most picked by all your analysts?
I believe seven went with Notre Dame. There was a tie between Oregon and Georgia at four or three, I believe.
That's interesting. I like Notre Dame a lot. They've got a really good team with C.J. Carr. Marcus Freeman's doing a great job. They lost, some, but they returned a ton. But this, the reality is in this, it's really hard to figure out exactly what these teams are unless you really know them and you've been able to be around them and see them in spring ball, just because this is unlike it ever was before. I mean, Ohio State added 51 new players between high school players, some of which are going to contribute and play, and then a lot of transfer portal players, most of which are going to contribute and play and play significant roles. So it's really hard to kind of figure out with some of these teams the level of integration they have and the speed of assimilation, how that works. And when you're like Ohio State or Texas, you play each other week two, like you've got to make sure the guys you brought in are greased up and ready to go from the jump. Now, with that in the 12-team playoff, Ohio State's got an incredibly difficult schedule this year, which, you know, I think that might play into why, you know, people think they might not be able to win a national title. And, you know, that's a real concern. But also, I think it does kind of test you and prepare you, should you come out of it healthy, that you're better positioned to be ultimately be able to go make a run in the CFP.
And the defense lost a lot, right? Sonny Styles, Caleb Downs, Arvell Reese, they're off to the NFL. But I want to start with the offense. I got to tell you, Bobby, I thought Julian saying, when I look back on last year in my head, I went, you know, he was good. He was a good game manager. The numbers are a little bit more eye-popping than I thought. I mean, he had a really good year, first year as a starter, 3,600 yards, 32 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Do you believe there's an opportunity for him to elevate his game this year and be like a true quarterback that we're used to seeing at Ohio State that puts on these dominant showings?
Well, it's ironic that you bring that up, and a lot of people kind of look at it where, I mean, he was the Heisman Trophy finalist.
Like, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
People talk about him being a game manager. He was in New York. And I think early on, and especially people who watched the Texas game last year, and I think both him and Arch, like Sark and Ryan Day, both of them were trying to keep the reins on those guys and not put them in a position to lose the game. As the season goes on, you begin to trust your first-year starters more. And, you know, I always love to go back to this old adage of Bill Parcells that he only liked to draft quarterbacks that had started for at least two seasons, ideally three, because returning with expectations, I think, matters. And people go back and watch, like, okay, well, you're the guy now. It's not a quarterback battle. You're not a first-year starter. You're expected now to elevate the players around you and elevate your team. And I felt like watching Julian through the spring, seeing him through the summer, he has a more demonstrative tone to him. He looks to be more in greater control of the offense. And I think they're going to let him do some things. And, you know, for guys that just arrives here, on the transfer portal or freshmen, like, all they know is Julian saying starting quarterback, Heisman Trophy finalist. And so I think there's a level of cachet and understanding that he has, that they have around him, where, you know, he's becoming more that alpha dog, and he's embraced that role. And I think they've tried to develop him in it. And so I think he can get better. He's got great receivers. They're going to tweak the offense a little bit with Arthur Smith, but I think those numbers could improve even more.
Yeah, Bobby, I think big things expected from him. We talked about some of the turnover on the roster, though. Is there a position group or a couple players that have really stood out to you so far that you think are going to surprise some people once the season starts?
Yeah, you start looking defensively, which is where they lost a ton. And you have four guys that are the top 40 picks, three in the top 11. I really like that linebacker, Peyton Pierce, who played a decent amount last year. He's going to be the guy that takes over as a serial caller. He'll be good. Jalen McClain returns, and he was kind of never got the credit he deserved because he's playing beside Caleb Downs last year. And so him at safety is going to be big. They pair him up with Earl Little, who's a very dynamic player. And so that should be really exciting to see what those guys can ultimately do. And then, offensively, trying to figure out who this, their third or second receiver opposite of J.J. Smith, who that is going to be awesome to see, because, they've got, some freshmen coming in, Brock Boyd, Jaquaden Guilford, like, those guys are really good. Chris Henry is in the mix. They brought in McEwen from UTSA, who can blow the top off the defense. Watched him hit some deep balls today. So they've got a lot of opportunities to be able to do that stuff. And there's some guys that I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised when you see them out there that may not be not household names today, but will develop into that here in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and this defense under Matt Patricia, super versatile with guys like Kenyatta Jackson. You mentioned Little coming in from Florida State and Alabama. They always have corners. They always have pass rushers. On offense, if I was to give you the option, Heisman Trophy ceremony, we talked about Sayan being there last year. You think it's more likely Sayan's there, or you think Jeremiah Smith in his final season with the Buckeyes, he winds up being a Heisman finalist?
The thing is, I don't know if you can decouple those, which is crazy, because if Jeremiah has a good season, yeah, like Julian probably, I mean, he's throwing him the ball. And so I think it's a little circular reference. If Jeremiah goes, I think Julian is definitely there. And I think that there's a good chance that he might be the Heisman Trophy winner. I know Jeremiah's looked at it. His goal is to get there as a non-quarterback. Like, that's kind of the apex. I mean, Devontae Smith won it. I get that. But, you do with it what you can. I would say it's more likely that Julian goes, just because when you look at it historically, I mean, most of the guys that get there are quarterbacks. And so probably 2/3 to 3/4 are. And so I'm going to roll with the QB just simply off the numbers.
Bobby Carpenter is our guest, former Buckeye great, national champ in 2002. The Big Ten, Ohio State is +180 to win it. Indiana's 2.5 to 1. Oregon's +260. Who scares you the most between those two at the top?
Oh, it's really interesting. I'd probably have to say Indiana, because they beat Ohio State last year. They were good. They've got a lot coming back. They've got to break in Hoover at quarterback, but Cignetti, like, over the last 2 years, he's had transfer quarterbacks, and both of them have played great. So why would you think that they're not going to play great this year? Like, it should be the same way. And I think it's wild to think that, there's an expectation where Indiana is just going to be good. But I think that's where we're at. And Dan Lanning, this is a great opportunity. He's got a great quarterback coming back. We'll see if they can continue to develop and how good they are. And you know that they're very talented, but ultimately, can they win big games in the playoffs? That's the one thing that's kind of, I wouldn't say haunted, but Dan Lanning, that's the question he has to be able to answer. And, we're getting to the point now where you start talking about, are you a big game coach? And he's won big games in the regular season. But I think right now I would lean with Kurt Cignetti and give him, the edge, just, simply they're good and they're coming off a national title.
That is a big statement, Bobby. We really appreciate you doing this today. Looking forward to chatting with you throughout the football season here. Everyone check out The Morning Juice, 97.1 The Fan in Columbus, Bobby Karp Show as well. All the information on his X page, @bcarp3. Thanks so much, man, and enjoy the football season.
Yeah. Hey, my pleasure. Thanks, guys. You have a good one.
I thought that was a big statement at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I thought him saying that Indiana – and we just talked about it on the show yesterday. Matt Eumanns with a great write-up talking to bookmakers from around the country. The public is not buying the Hoosiers returning to prominence. And it's so funny. It's like, guys, this is Cignetti. If this was college basketball, you'd believe. Because college basketball, we're conditioned to believing you could turn over a roster and just start over.
So true.
And when I first started betting on the on stuff, Patrick Maher would be like, dude, you're getting way too caught up in all this semantics with college basketball. You bet on coaches. That's it. And if you're going to bet on coaches, why wouldn't you bet on Kurt Cignetti? So that's my thought there. We're going to kick it to the National Football League. The rest of the NFC East has improved. Are they good enough to not knock the Eagles off their pedestal? We'll examine that with Daryl Moose Johnston next on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on A Numbers Game, Dustin Sweetelson, Kelly Bidlin coming at you as always, Circa Sportsbook, downtown Las Vegas. I'm noticing we're on, what, day three of Bet Bash, and Sportsbook's a little bit quieter this early in the morning.
It's really funny.
Perhaps the war of attrition with the long days and the even longer nights as people made their way out to Las Vegas, starting to get to some of the people in town.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. There's a lot of people here for sports betting in this casino.
Well, there was a lot of people.
None of them are in the book right now.
But there was a lot of people during the day while we were doing our show the last couple days. And now I'm just noticing it's only a couple gentlemen and all the proxies waiting to sign people up for the contest. Where are we at with the contest, by the way, as I'm giving the audience a great shot of the Yarmulke bald spot that I have? We are at 1468 in million. 68 in Survivor, and Grandissimo's at 17. To Grandissimo's crazy. That is absolutely nuts.
Man, we've had a few of those trickle in here over the past week.
And I think our next guest might be entered in Grandissimo. I think he's got his own entry by himself.
I already maxed out entries.
He is Chris the Bear Felica, Fox Sports betting analyst, Bear Bets podcast, at Chris Felica on X. Chris, thanks for doing this. Appreciate you hanging out with us after a wild travel schedule for you. You got to explain the logistics to me. You spent a couple days out here. You were here literally yesterday. Now you're back home already? When did you get in?
Well, even before that, I was in L.A. last weekend for our Fox Sports football preseason meeting. So I was in, flew to L.A. Thursday, in L.A. Thursday night, Friday, Saturday, flew home late Saturday, and then turned back around Tuesday morning, flew to Vegas, and then flew back out home here to Connecticut on Thursday, only because we're turning around and then we've had a vacation planned for next week. So we're headed out again on an Alaska cruise next week. So yeah, I am all over the place right now. But yeah, sorry I had to leave early and get back here to get stuff ready for our trip.
That's insanity.
By the way, to answer your question, I got three Grandissimo.
Yeah, of course. I'm sure the Bear Bets podcast has one by themselves, as you guys as a group, to promote it every week.
Hardly.
All right, I want to talk about your trip out here. But first, you scared me this morning because I saw your tweet in response to Lee Corso turning 91. But I just saw on the timeline Lee Corso 91. I'm like, oh no, am I going to have to do a eulogy on the show tonight for a legend in the game? But we should acknowledge your relationship with Lee Corso going back to your game day days. 91 years old, still doing it, man. What an icon.
Oh, he's the best. As I said, he is the GOAT. He is a man that basically, I think all of us who are in the pregame show business owe him a massive debt of gratitude. I mean, he made it cool. He made it must-watch TV. With a blend of humor and entertainment and knowledge and wit. I had called him a little while ago, got his voicemail. I'm sure he's going to call me back. Maybe he'll even call me back during the segment. I'm not going to put him on, but he's the man that gave me the nickname as well. So without him, there's no Bear.
Oh, really? See, that's right. I always like those origin stories of like how someone got their nickname. When I first met Patrick Maher, fun fact, I said, hi, my name's Dustin. You can call me Swede because everyone called me Swede my whole life. He goes, yeah, I'm not going to do that. You can't give yourself your own nickname. He has never once referred to me as Swede.
Patrick, by the way, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. He's like, I'm not going to do that. He came up with the big guy, and then the big guy stuck. So that ended up working out for me. I promise we'll get to the sports, but a couple items we got to get through here. One, Vinny Malulo tonight being inducted into the Sports Betting Hall of Fame right behind us. And our connection is when I first came out with Patrick to do shows for Mad Dog Radio on VSiN before we ever worked here, Vinny pulled me aside and was like, hey, you guys had Chris on? We go way back. Can you give him give me his number? I'd love to have him on. So that's our connection. And Vinny's a legend in the game. And my favorite is finding out after the fact that the book that I read, Michael Koenig's The Smart Money, that Vinny is one of the characters in the book that I enjoyed so much. But talk to me about Vinny, what it means and what he means to you and him being a Hall of Famer today.
No, Vinny is awesome. Like, I have known Vinny for 30 years, I would say, going back to the mid-90s in his days at Caesars. I can remember going to Caesars for the 94 World Cup it was. I think it was 94.
Yeah.
And I hung out there. Where, maybe 94, no, 98. 90, it was 98. It was, because I was still in Miami in 94. But it was 98. I actually went to Caesars with Chris Fowler after the X Games were over. We took a little trip and hung out at Caesars. We watched the infamous England World Cup match against Argentina with the red. Vinny was out there, took care of it. So I've known Vinny for a while, going back to horse racing days and such. Well, we're both New Yorkers. We're diehard Islanders fans. It was funny. We were joking the other day when he came over and said hello. We were joking about Comac Arena and the Long Island Ducks. So, Vinny and I are cut from a lot of the same cloths, and it's good to have a lot of similar connections. And that means, obviously, mutual friends, mutual respect amongst a lot of people. But Vinny is one of the good guys, the best guys in the industry, and certainly well-deserved induction there.
Yeah, it was, it's probably been a couple years since I've seen him at this point, Dustin. We shared a long embrace in the middle of Bet Bash yesterday. It was a long hug video that I shared yesterday.
That is,
love,
like,
that man.
With a bullet, favorite person in Vegas.
It
and
really
I don't see
is.
Him enough, but so he's the reason I'm here. I don't know if people know this. When Patrick left our old Mad Dog show and he did his final show, and ironically, he's back on Mad Dog now, but you get my point. People were calling in crying. Grown men were crying. Vinny called in to congratulate Patrick and everything. And then he goes on the end of his call, all right, Patrick, I got you. I'm coming for the big guy next. He texts me after. He goes, give me your resume. And that's how the ball got rolling on me winding up at VSiN.
Awesome. That's awesome. I don't know if you caught this when Chris was telling his story, but I have to ask this question to clarify. Did I pick up that you and Chris Fowler were at the X Games? Were you working the X Games?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, Chris was one of the original X Games voices. He and cool. Chris McHenry and a bunch of other. But yeah, back when I first started at ESPN, we were still. It was like you'd work like seasonal positions.
Right.
So I was like the college game day college football researcher. Then I would do college basketball researcher, and then it would kind of be a little bit of a lull. And then as a way to just to kind of bridge the gap and make some money, because I wasn't getting paid, I became the X Games researcher, because Chris, I had a great relationship with Chris. So he kind of got me on board there. And yeah, no, I worked the 98 X Games in San Diego, which were awesome. I remember Rat Salt and Biker Sherlock and
this is amazing. This is amazing.
De Silva, all of the great X Games athletes at the time. So yeah, spent a couple weeks in San Diego. And then later that year, we had the Winter X Games out in Crested Butte, which were, I was actually in Colorado the day that the Jets and Broncos played the AFC Championship game, and Jets had the lead and wound up losing. But Noah, I was a vaunted X Games researcher back in the day.
This is
that,
amazing.
That was a fun couple of weeks. Great weather, great time, very, very loose. And then, yeah, we celebrated in Vegas afterwards.
What is Chris Felica's all-time favorite X Games trick? Name, because there's so many.
Well,
right? You got like the melon.
I was all about the bike stunt vert. That was kind of my favorite event, and to be there under the lights with the music going and the crowd pumping. Yeah, the bike stunt vert was my X Games event of choice.
Chris Felica is with us, Fox Sports Bear Bets podcast at Chris Felica on X. All right, we've been on the air since some of this news is developing in college football right now. And I'm kind of dumb. It takes a lot of reading and punching it into AI for me to comprehend. What the heck is going on now with the conferences and the rules that they're trying to implement? And how does this impact leagues like the ACC and the Big 12?
Well, I think that's what I'm trying to figure out as well. Why Cody Campbell
is still talking?
Talking's fine. But why is he behind in supporting this bill? Because it's something that clearly goes against Texas Tech and his school and his collective's like best interest. Like the schools that kind of got their ducks in a row in terms of their collectives and their boosters, like Texas Tech, Miami's another one. Like the way this the bill is kind of out there right now, it kind of keeps the SEC and the Big Ten. It really does create them as the big two, and it kind of sets a salary cap. And I just don't know why like someone like that would want to do it. It eliminates conference movement, so like Miami couldn't potentially go to another conference and things like that. So I'm just baffled because I can't even imagine people in the SEC, programs in the SEC being for this. Like you're telling me Lane Kiffin is going to tell Steve Scalise, oh yeah, no, we're good with the a $50 million cap for everyone. We don't want anybody to be able to, like, he's going to be okay with that. LSU with more booster money and deeper pockets than almost anyone out there. So I can't see how this is ultimately even going to come to a vote before they recess. I think there will be changes. Is it going to ultimately wind up with a super league where it's kind of the Big Ten, the SEC, and a couple of teams from the ACC, Big 12, wherever else, maybe, but I just don't get the hesitation and why we can't all see the writing on the wall that ultimately this is going to end with some unionization and college athletes being negotiated with as employees.
All right. We will talk about Indiana coming up next. Should people be doubting them? And more importantly, a topic we are experts on, Buffalo wing ordering strategy. That's next on VSiN.